So this is a different passage. John is using a different metaphor here than he does later in the gospel when he calls Jesus the good shepherd, or Jesus calls himself the good shepherd, which he didn't do, of course. But we'll get to that later. There's a line in one of the letters of Paul that has haunted me for years and years and years and years. I've been really struck by it, and I don't know what it means, but it's still striking. Paul wrote, "I live now, not I, but Christ lives in me." It's striking. It's striking. But I try to get a handle on where that fits into my experience. And as Timothy Radcliffe did in his lovely speech the other night at King's, I go to fiction. And there's a line I've never forgotten from Wuthering Heights. I don't know whether anybody reads that anymore, but it was a classic text in his day. One of the Bronte girls wrote it. So there's a big love affair between Kathy and Heathcliff. And at one point, these words are put into Kathy's mouth. "I live now, but Heathcliff lives in me." That gets me minimally closer to understanding what all this in existence is. So I bring this all up because more and more I'm struck by the Gospel of John because it is so strange and so unique. But I'd like to propose it's also the most interior of the Gospels. That is, John has those famous seven statements that begin, I am the living bread, I am the life, the way and the truth, I am the resurrection and the life, I am the living water, and then it goes on and on and on. So Jesus is saying, I am the life, the way and the truth. Now, unlike the synoptic gospel, where you read, blessed are the poor, blah, blah, okay, I understand that, and then you could run away with that and do whatever that's supposed to mean. But these things are, they make you itch. What do they mean? Jesus is my light, after he cures the blind man. I am the living water, after he feeds this Samaritan woman at the well. In other words, we're invited, I think, unlike the synoptic gospels, precisely to ask questions. What the devil is this all about? All this I am stuff. No, you're there, I'm here. But then Paul contradicts that by saying, no, I live, no, not I, but Christ lives in me. I am Heathcliff. But then the deficiency of the Pauline statement is, what does that mean in specific terms? And that's the beauty of John's gospel, because he puts all these I am statements out. I am the living water, I am the bread of life, I am the resurrection and the life. And you just can't flat out accept, oh, that's nice, you're the living bread. Okay, that's nice. No, you have to say, what in blazes is going on here? And of course, the shape of the statement determines the shape of the question. What really does sustain me, like bread sustains me? What really illumines my life? Is it Jesus who's the light of my life? Or what are the lights of my life? Gustav Mahler, George Rouault, Rembrandt, my friends, Okay, they're all lights. But clearly something more profound and transformative is being adverted to here. The light. What is the light of my life? I think, in the dynamic that John has created, and that's exactly where the text should lead us, to ask questions. It doesn't give readily available answers. It's puzzling. And to address the puzzle, you have to say, well, he's the living bread, then what am I nourished by? If he's the way and the truth and the life, then what does it take for me to be alive? Pretty basic stuff, eh? What is true in my life? And when I start pursuing that, then I run into big trouble because I have so many opposing lights in my life. My greed, my mediocrity, my half-heartedness, you know. Those are my life, more often than not. Unfortunately, Jesus comes in someplace later on in the list. But that's why I say John, the Gospel of John pushes us, I think, if we attend to it and ask questions, because it raises these questions for us. Who is my life? What makes me alive? What makes me dead? What nourishes me? What illuminates me? And you can go down all those statements. And they all pose this question of what does it do for me? And that's why I say John strikes me as the most interior of the Gospels, because the other guys, wonderful as they are, I'd hate to see a world without the Beatitudes, for example. But I can go down the Beatitudes and say, yeah, I did that. I fed the hungry, I clothed the naked, you know, I took in the stranger, blah, 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 blah. But I don't think it gets to my interior, really. The place where I answer the question, Trojak, who are you really? You know? And if I take that stuff seriously, if I take Paul seriously, if I take the Gospel of John seriously, then I have to make these comparisons. What does light up my life? What does nourish me? What is the truth of my life? When am I dead, really, and when am I really alive? That's why I think that John, I may be wrong, of course, is the most interior of the Gospel, because he forces us, if we take him seriously, or her, could have been a woman who wrote that. I strongly suspect it was, but that's all right. Because it seems to me women ask, are ready more than men to ask more searching questions about life and themselves. But all that aside, we're left with this great interrogation, I think, that we have to carry on with ourselves. What makes me alive? It's certainly not the code of canon law, God forbid. Certainly not the hierarchy of the church, God forbid, because they've been deadening as well as they've been enlivening, in my experience at least. So it has to be something else, someone else. And then I think gratefully of the people I've known in my life, three of them, who I believe really did have Jesus as the center of their existence, Sister Mary Margaret Maher, remarkable Ursuline nun who died just a few years ago. We taught together for years. She was glorious. The kids loved her. Really loved her. Not just because she's wearing that big, ridiculous Ursuline bib at the time, which was their uniform. They loved this woman. 30 years after, I got an email from guys I had taught in Decatur, Illinois, More than 30 years ago. We just wanted to tell you how important you and Sister Mary Margaret were in our lives. I was indeed touched and flattered by that, but I knew I was terribly outscored by Mary Margaret Maher, who was a much richer, deeper, fuller presence for these kids than I was. My spiritual director, the only good thing that ever came out of Notre Dame for me, my spiritual director, priest named Paul Rankin, former stockbroker, and joined the Holy Cross Order. It was an extraordinarily difficult time. The house I lived in was run by a severely pathologically neurotic priest who did his best to torture people. I'm not making this up, but then I could go across the lake, see Paul Rankin. He simply said, "Ron, leave." And he was as good as his word. He was a marvel. Then finally, a Franciscan spiritual director I had for several years, Medard Buvala, I think he's dead now. He was chaplain at a hospital. I never saw the nurses interact so humanly with any, certainly not with the doctors. I'm a doctor after all. But Medard would come into the room and they would melt. They would unfold like flowers in the sun. Because they knew Medard as a fellow human being, not as some idolatrous creature of the institutional church. Not before his little brown suit, you know. Those little Franciscan uniforms, which are so cute, you know, so picturesque. You can't paint a picture without having Franciscan running down the street with a little cowl. And, you know. Medard didn't pay any attention to that rubbish. And the beauty of Medard, he was able to transcend that stuff, all those accoutrements of his order. So, what I'm trying to do is fill in the blanks for me as an invitation for you to do the same. Who gives life to you? Real life. Who is the figure of Jesus in your lives? So I can point to these three people with whom my own life has been richly blessed. But then I have to keep looking, keep asking. Haven't seen any of them for years and years. But they're very much alive. And I think it's the memory of them that promotes me to ask again and again, Trojak, who makes you alive? Who is your truth? Not some truth that's pasted on your head, but your truth. The truth of your being, of your reality. Well, John keeps pimping us, I think, with those metaphors, encouraging us to ask those questions. Absolutely central, vital, essential questions for our humanity.